I grew up by the water, and I used to have these dreams. Dreams where I was swimming, in the ocean, in the river, among hundreds, thousands of fish. Fish of all sizes, turquoise, red, gold, striped with deep green, sparkling scales reflecting the sunlight that rippled from above. In these dreams, I never had trouble breathing. The water was always clear. The reef was always alive. I could move freely, and together, the fish and I would just swim. Others have felt it too. In the Mekong region, sculpted into the temple walls of Angkor Wat, painted onto ancient caves in Thailand, are people and fish. Today, stories about the Mekong River, one man's journey to find and protect its magic, and why it's important for us to keep dreaming.
Welcome to Expedition Earth, a podcast where we reconnect to the wonders of our world and find a way to protect them. I'm your host, National Geographic Explorer Lily Sedigat. Together, we'll rediscover what makes us human.
The river is beautiful in the fading light. The sky turns into a gentle haze as the sun melts into the water's surface. Everything is soft, golden. Mekong, or Mother River, is the most productive river on Earth. Providing over 2 million tons of fish each year, it supports more than 70 million people across 6 countries. In some places, it's like the ocean, so wide you can't see across. In others, forests lush and green in the dry season flood when it rains and the ground submerges. And when the waters rise, the river turns and flows upstream. As it heads to the sea, the Mekong breaks into hundreds of braided channels. Cascading water falls around limestone rock and then drifts alongside sandy islands. On the surface, the water moves slowly, but underneath are deep pools with mysteries modern humans have yet to discover. And in recent years, development, dams, have threatened the course of the Mekong.
There are 3,000-year-old cave paintings in Thailand where people painted themselves on the walls of these caves where they were living, and then they painted fish, giant catfish.
This is Zeb Hogan.
Those were the two most important things that they thought to depict, you know, on these cave walls where they were living. So you can just see how important these fish were in the past, and you still see it very clearly in the present.
Zeb works with fish.
I am a research biologist. I specialize in studying large freshwater fish.
Specifically, fish over 2 meters long that weigh over 100 kilograms. Zeb finds them, studies them, and protects them.
You know, it's funny, I feel it every time. I've seen probably more of these big fish than anybody. And every time I see one of these fish, I can't believe how big it is. They're just so unbelievably large. Those people in Thailand who painted themselves and then painted giant catfish on the cave walls, they felt the same thing, clearly.
It was connection between humans and fish, swimming through a world together. We were floating through a landscape where these creatures weren't just food, weren't just animals. They were a part of our world. And we felt it so intensely, we had to create something to show it. That relationship is something Zeb sees affected as the river changes.
The Mekong is changing. Dams are being built. The hydrology, this seasonal flood pulse, it all is changing. And so that's obviously one of the concerns, is that essential connection between people in the region and the river might be lost.
The Mekong is home to over 1,000 species of freshwater fish, including one of the world's largest and most endangered species, the giant catfish. The giant catfish is part of a rare but diverse group that can grow to huge sizes.
Catfish, carp, sturgeon, electric eels, sawfish, freshwater stingrays, freshwater sharks.
These fish occur on every continent except Antarctica. And the Mekong is home to more species of the big fish than any other river on Earth.
When I went over to Thailand, my intent was not to study these big fish, but I was studying the ecology and migrations of smaller fish.
As an undergraduate in the United States, Seb worked on the Colorado River. He went to Thailand as a Fulbright exchange student. And while he was there, he kept hearing stories of these incredibly large fish.
And at first when I heard them, I didn't believe them. Then I started seeing photos and I thought, no, are these photos real? It was unbelievable at first.
And after a while, Seb was finally able to see these fish for himself.
A friend of mine, when I was living in Thailand, invited me up to northern Thailand at the only site where they were still catching these big fish. And I went up there, and by chance, they had caught one of these fish, and they had brought it to shore and had tied it up. The fish was still alive, but its body was bent in a very uncomfortable-looking way. The fish are so big and so powerful, that was a way to hold it before it was harvested. And just watching that fish struggle, like I'd never really connected with an individual fish. I'm not a very emotional person, so this was an unusual feeling for me, but I really was sad. And I just was really sad for that fish that was going to be killed. As I looked into it more, I just realized that nobody was really doing any research on these fish, which is surprising. In marine systems, marine megafauna are very popular animals to study. But in freshwater, for whatever reason, there just wasn't very much focus on these big fish. Most of them are endangered, and I just felt like they needed our help. And I felt like I could do something that would have value.
Seb's approach to conservation focuses on scientific research and depends on local knowledge. He learned Thai and considers collaboration crucial to the work. One of his first projects with large fish was an effort to conserve the Mekong giant catfish. The concept was simple. Every time someone caught a giant catfish, they'd call Seb and his team, who would come, pay for it, and then release it.
And so we worked with the fishermen. We contacted all the fishermen up and down the river that would catch these fish. And only a few of them would be caught a year, but we would just spread the word. And we said, if anyone catches one of these fish, please call us. We'll come out. We'll pay you whatever you would have received if you would have sold it. And we'll come out and then we'll release it. And with a giant catfish, they don't have teeth. Easiest way to hold on to them is just by gripping their mouth. It was actually possible to hold on to them and swim down with the fish and push it down into the depths. One of the things that I didn't realize is that you don't have to go down very far in muddy water before it gets dark. And so I would swim down with the fish, maybe 5 or 10 feet deep, not that deep, and it would get dark. And then I would just push the fish. And the goal was to get it to swim down. You want it to go down where it can't be caught again. We tend to think of fish as food and maybe not having personalities or, you know, not being unique. But fish, they have their own world, their own behavior that totally, in a lot of ways, totally separate from our world. And so pushing that big fish down, it was almost trying to get it back to its world that was separate from our world. Because when they're down 60 or 70 meters down in the water, in the dark, that's their world.
Back in the United States, Seb had focused on the Colorado River. As one of the major rivers in the U.S., its course runs through many different landscapes. Starting in the mountains, it flows through the desert, cuts through the red and orange rock of the Grand Canyon, and empties into the Gulf of Mexico. At points, it creates pockets so green, so dense, it can seem like a tropical jungle, even though it's surrounded by miles of dry sand. And while the Colorado provides water to 40 million people, it's also known as a river that's entirely changed because of people.
I had been working with fish and doing fish surveys on the Colorado River in Arizona, saw the clear impact that dams on the Colorado River have had on fish there, to the point where there are basically no native fish in the lower portions of the Colorado River now. And the river many years is dry, doesn't reach the ocean anymore. So we fundamentally, where I was coming from a landscape and a system that had been totally and fundamentally altered by humans. And so I came to Thailand sort of with that experience at a period when dams were just being planned for the Mekong.
Dams play an important role for humans. They can generate electricity, control flooding, and provide water security. But dams also have environmental consequences. They change the way rivers function, sometimes affecting communities downstream, and sometimes harming local fish populations.
Recently, over the last 20 years or so, partially because of political stability, which has been a good thing, development has accelerated. And so there are dams being built on the Mekong. Obviously, people are doing well, populations are growing, and so there's an incredible amount of pressure from people harvesting fish. The region right now, the river right now, is facing a lot of challenges from accelerating development and population growth.
And while development in and of itself isn't always a bad thing, one of the keys to creating a sustainable future for the Mekong hinges on understanding the river, recognizing its natural ebbs and flows, the species and communities that rely on it. To help build that understanding, Zeb is working on an 8-year project called Wonders of the Mekong.
The Wonders of the Mekong project, it focuses broadly on water, fisheries, and biodiversity. And the project really is founded on the attitude that a functional, healthy Mekong River has immense value to people, to fish, to biodiversity. And so the project is trying to understand and highlight all of those values.
Part of the project is research, studying fish, biodiversity, hydrology. Another aspect is collaborating with students and faculty at the Inland Fisheries Research and Development Institute of Cambodia. Seb and the team focus on a different research question to explore important aspects of the river's ecosystem, with everything from tagging fish to mapping water quality. Their focus is to create a new narrative for the Mekong.
The narrative that the Mekong River is dying or dead, it's still one of the most biodiverse rivers in the world, one of the most productive rivers in the world. It's incredibly important. And so this negative narrative is counterproductive because the river has such immense value. It doesn't do any good to lose sight of that. I mean, yes, there are huge challenges. Yes, there's overharvest. Yes, there are problems. But we need to work to find a solution rather than just say the river's dying.
In northern Cambodia, there are places in the Mekong long considered haven, refuge for fish. They're the river's deep pools, dramatic drops in the underwater landscape that fall 70, 80 meters, maybe more. Dark cliffs and caves where fish hooks and nets can't reach. Places humans haven't yet seen, that we don't quite understand. As the next research focus for Wonders of the Mekong, Seb and his team will send an ROV submersible, a remotely operated vehicle, to explore.
So we're going to go down for the first time and see what's living down there to try to appreciate this very special but inaccessible and poorly understood place. And this area that we're talking about it's a spawning area for all of Cambodia. So this area supports the fish production of the entire country.
The project comes at a critical time for the area.
20 kilometers upstream from where we're working is a Ramsar site, so a site that's been designated as a wetland of international importance. And in that same location, they're surveying for a dam right now. And so all of these things are happening at the same time. The communities that live in these areas know the importance of these areas. So we're trying to shine a light on some of these issues and the importance of these areas to a wider audience.
Although Seb is trying to reframe the narrative that the river is dying or dead, he also sees communities along the water struggle with a changing Mekong every day.
You know, when I first started doing this work, there were old accounts written in Thai of what the situation was like 100 years ago when these fish were more common, when they were catching hundreds or thousands of them. I haven't seen a Mekong giant catfish in the wild since 2015, and I still think they're out there.
That change in the fishing landscape is something Seb has seen throughout Southeast Asia. And when he talks with people, he recognizes a shared feeling about what's happening in the region.
The expression I've heard the most often, and I can feel it when I ask the question, I feel their response before they even say it. Everyone makes this sound, which is like just this kind of groan that comes from inside of them that indicates the loss. You can feel the loss when they make this sound, which just sort of indicates nostalgia and remembering better catches in the past.
When an ecosystem changes, we can lose fish. Extinction of a species points to things happening both in and to the water. And when the big fish disappear, it's a sign of trouble for the river. This is something we've seen before, something occurring right now. In 2019, the Chinese paddlefish, a giant freshwater fish iconic to the Yangtze River, was declared extinct.
You see this with the Chinese paddlefish in China. The existential threat to these fish is damage to the environment. So something like a dam that fundamentally changes the hydrology, the temperature, the water quality.
Overfishing is often seen as another existential threat to fish in the wild. When fish are harvested before maturity, their sizes and populations both shrink. It's a complex tension. People need to eat, but growing populations can put pressure on an ecosystem. And fishers depend on the river for their livelihoods. They're often the most knowledgeable about it, carry the most respect for it, and are the ones most invested in wanting to keep it healthy.
We rely on them for our work. These are the people that have the greatest appreciation for the river, the greatest knowledge of the fish. And so I don't think I've ever been in a situation where we go anywhere to tell someone what they're doing is wrong. We absolutely need a relationship and cooperation from people who are living along the river.
The challenges facing the Mekong are real. But dwelling on the dying river narrative takes away from the positive changes people are already making. It takes away from the places where the river is thriving.
Yeah, so there's an amazing example in northern Thailand on a river called the Ngao. 25 years ago, one of the communities decided to set aside a small area of river in front of their village as a no fishing area. And this village happened to be at the entrance to the valley. So all of the other people that were going in and out of the valley to the different communities would pass this one village, and they would see this fish reserve. And remarkably, there was maybe 500 meters of river that was protected for no fishing. And in the dry season, the fish were incredibly dense in this one little stretch of river that was protected. And so they built a platform over this section of river. And all the people would come during the dry season to watch the fish. And so slowly, all of the communities in this valley established conservation areas. And they've all established these small no-fishing zones that have been shown to dramatically increase the number of fish in the river dramatically increase diversity of fish in the river. And this happened totally organically over the last 25 years.
Seb and the team continue to find new solutions to deepen their understanding of the Mekong and the fish that make it their home.
I was there last month. We did a large endangered fish release. We tagged 1,600 endangered fish that had been raised in ponds, and we released them into the Tonle Sap Lake, partially for conservation, but also partially for research to try to understand whether or not these fish that had been raised in ponds could actually be used for conservation. So the thought was, okay, we're taking these endangered fish, we're going to put them in a fish reserve where no fishing is allowed, and then hopefully, you know, some of them would survive.
The release didn't go exactly as expected.
We did it in the dry season because fish congregate in these fish reserves in the dry season. And so I thought, okay, we'll try it in the dry season. Maybe the fish will stay in the fish reserve. They didn't. They all went out, and many of them were caught very quickly after we released them. In September, at the height of the rainy season, we're going to try again. And I'm guessing that not very many of the fish will be caught. And it seems obvious now. I mean, it seems obvious after we tried it, but you don't know. You try, you learn. That's what we do.
The outcome isn't always perfect, but they do the work anyway. It's part of building understanding, steps in a necessary process that go back to the very beginning when Seb was buying giant catfish to release.
On some levels, it's a silly idea because, you know, is it sustainable? How is that going to be sustainable? But I felt like I wanted to try, and I wanted to see where it led. If you sit around talking yourself out of everything, you'll never do anything. So talk yourself into some stuff, and if it doesn't work or if it's silly, then you do something else after you figure that out. We continue to do this work even though there's not always a perfect outcome. On some level, you have to ask yourself, what kind of world do you want to live in? And I think all of us want to live in a world that is vibrant and rich and has 10-foot long fish. In Cambodia, when I first started working there, we bought a little boat. We had a little like 10 or 15 horsepower motor. It was probably a 10-foot long boat, and we could take it anywhere. And a lot of times we would be out on the river at night on this little boat because the fishermen were catching Mekong giant catfish at night. And so they would call us and we would go down and jump in our little boat and drive through the night and go find these fishermen who had caught these big fish. And the particular night I remember, it was raining and we were probably 10 kilometers upstream of Phnom Penh on the Tonle Sap, and it was very dark, it was raining, and you could see the lights of Phnom Penh in the distance. Phnom Penh's a huge city, so you could see all these people off in the distance. And we pulled up next to these fishermen, and they had caught one of the biggest giant catfish that I had ever seen. So it was probably 500 or 550 pounds, about 9 feet long. And it was in the water. And I just remember feeling like we were so alone. We were so alone with this enormous fish, you know, this incredibly rare, incredibly special fish. And we were the only ones in the whole world. And literally we were the only ones in the whole world who knew that this was happening, that this fish was there, that it had been caught. And just with the backdrop of all of the lights and just realizing that even surrounded by millions of people, we were alone with this fish out in the middle of the night on the Tonle Sap.
This podcast is brought to you by True Visions. To view more of Seb's work, check out his show, Monster Fish, Season 3, Mekong Mystery, where he travels to Cone Falls and Laos in search of the ultimate fish superhighway. Expedition Earth is produced by National Geographic Asia in partnership with the National Geographic Society. I'm your host, Lily Sedigat. Thank you for listening.